Welcome to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus.
The Valley of Elah, the Valley of the Oak or Terebinth, best known as the place described in the Bible where the Israelites were encamped when David fought Goliath. Near Azekah and Socho. On the west side of the valley near Socho, there's a very large and ancient tree of its kind. As we look at King David, last week when he's chosen, but not crowned, he's not crowned as king. Now take a look at the map, if you will. It starts at zero, Bethlehem. What happened in Bethlehem? King David was born. And then if you go straight across west, you'll see Gath, G-A-T-H, and just to the right of that, Socho. That, the number one there. That is the place of the battle between David and Goliath. That's where we're kind of going to see it tonight. That's where we're going to look. Number two is up northeast to Nob, and that's where he's going to go hide. Number three is back west in the Gaza Strip, Philistia, near Gath, which is where Goliath is from. But that's where King David goes before he's king. When he's hiding, he ducks in there and hangs out with the Philistines for a long time. He had some troubles with Saul. Number four is back east near Adullam. Number five is way southeast, east of the Dead Sea, in Moab. And then number six, due west of there, in modern Israel, Masada, it's called. It was called the Stronghold back then. Number seven is due west in Ziklag, though he went to several places. Number eight is Hebron, and that's northeast, and that's where he is crowned king. So there's a lot of motion for a man who generally would have stayed in his own territory. We're looking at a man who's mobile for purposes. Last week we saw King David as a man of God's choice. Tonight we're going to see a man of war. We're going to look at 1 Samuel chapter 17. It's a lengthy passage, and we're going to see this great battle. A story some of us might remember. Certainly the media comments using this story regularly when the Sydney Roosters were going to play the St. George Dragons. It was a David versus Goliath story. When some people take on Mammoth Commonwealth Bank or ANZ Bank, they go up against Macquarie Bank when they're fighting. They're just a little guy and they're down at the airport and they're fighting the big system. It's a David and Goliath story. Well, it's funny the media uses that so much because it's really this nice Jewish boy who's this little guy and Goliath, which is the mammoth Gentile. In modern parlance, in the description about Israel and Palestine, David becomes the Palestinian and Goliath becomes the big bad Jewish people. That's how the media is trying to portray it, because here's these taunting Israelis with all their strength and American dollars against the poor little Gaza people with Hezbollah and Hamas assisting from poor countries like Syria and Iran. So the story is one of reproach on the Jewish people that gets knocked back by a little guy. David goes up and says, "What's wrong with you people?" He looks down at the valley and sees this giant of a man, Goliath. You know how big 6 cubits are? 18 inches, 1 cubit, about from the tip of your middle finger to your elbow. So 6 of those is 9 foot tall. And a span is these 9 inches here. So 9 foot and change. You ever met anybody who's 9 foot and change? I've never. He's a mammoth, bigger than the ceiling. Yeah, the ceiling's 8 foot something. He'd be bumping his head off the ceiling. Almost 3 meters. 3 meters tall. He's a gorilla. And then he's got all this armor that was heavy as. And it was overlaid and overlaid so it looked like fish scales that would protect every part of his body. Did you see Andre the Giant in the movie Princess Bride? I mean, there you go. That's how big he is. Well, here he is, this Philistine, who is only named twice in the story. The rest of the time, he's called the Philistine because he is so identified with Philistia, Plishtim in Hebrew, the word from which the modern-day Palestinians derive their name. So wait a minute, who's the Philistine and who are the Palestinians and who's the David? It's a little Jewish. Well, dear BBC, we'll send you a note later. David is really upset. And you get a picture of this fella. We're studying the life of David. What do you see? What traits do you see? What's he doing at the beginning of the story? Where is he? He's just being a shepherd. He's doing his job, being a faithful shepherd, which is a low life position. It's like, well, he's the runt of the litter, and we're going to stick him out with the sheep. So what we see him, he's this kid. So the big guys, his big brothers, there's only 3 listed here. that we know there are seven. There's three that are listed. The three older of the sons, verse 13, had gone after Saul to the battle. You get this picture of King Saul, a champion, a battalion warrior, and here go the three big older brothers. They've been conscripted or they've signed on to go, and they're duty-bound to protect Israel against the Philistines. David, he's just a runt. We don't know if he's 10, 8, 15. He's not a man of war yet. When did Jewish men go to war? How old were they? 20. Remember, in the wilderness, the men over 20 were killed off, and the men under 20. That's the time when the men go to war. So David's obviously younger than 20. Exactly how many years, we don't know. And what else do we see about him? We know he's a shepherd, and what's his relation to his dad? He's obedient to his dad. His dad tells him, would you take these cookies down to your brothers? Take some cheese to the ringleaders, take some bickies from the pantry truck out there to the boys. And he does it. You don't see him whinging. You don't see him saying, you know, I've got my sheep. What am I supposed to do? You just see him, yes, sir, going. There's something about his heart and his attitude that's beautiful, not only here, but throughout the record of his life. What else can we see? Verse 20.
He gets up early in the morning.
What does that mean? Yes, I agree. Early in the morning is what I want you to see. Do you know other people in the Bible who've risen early in the morning? Every prophet did. Abraham did. Moses did. Every man of God rose early in the morning.
You know what David said in the Psalms? I awake the dawn.
Awake, psaltery and harp, and I will rouse the dawn. Well, there's something about finding God early in the morning that is really personally useful. I've discovered that. I grew up and I was the runt of the litter, third of three kids. I've had three kids, and they all have variant time schedules. My wife has a schedule. Everybody has their own schedule, but if you want to find God, early in the morning might just be the best time of day. There's something about seeking God early. King David says this often in the Psalms. Early will I seek you. O Lord, in the morning will I lift up my prayers unto thee and will look up. Psalm 5. You see this reflection of his early bird finding of the Lord. It's without distraction. The buses haven't started running. The world hasn't arisen. You can hear yourself think. You can hear God think. There's something about that. So look with me at chapter 13, verse number 14. This is in the, how shall I say, the slam of King Saul, the rebuke of King Saul by the prophet Samuel. It says in 13:13, Samuel said to Saul, you've acted foolishly. You've not kept the commandment of the Lord your God, which he commanded you. For now the Lord would have established your kingdom over Israel forever, but you blew it, buddy. Verse 14, now your kingdom shall not endure. The Lord has sought out for himself a man after his own heart, and the Lord has appointed him as ruler over his people, because you've not kept what the Lord commanded you. So God commanded you something, you blew it, God's going to command somebody else, and it's a person who's after his own heart. It's just one Hebrew word, but boy, is that beautiful. After God's own heart. And that's the description that we know King David to be. 13:14. That's who King David is in prediction before we even see him, which happened in chapter 16 last week. So back to 17. And we see this battle, this man of war. And what does David say about himself concerning his own courage level? Who fights with lions? Who fights with bears? I want to hear the Wizard of Oz taunt, you know. Strategy, track record, he's already done this before. Who is this other guy? I fought lions. This guy looks less than a lion. I fought bears. He's less than that guy. Now, he might have fought a lion cub or a bear cub, but still, he's fought something of size for a little guy like him. He's no man of strength. He's a boy.
You know, in the art gallery, there's a picture of David carrying a sheep over the dead body of a lion and a bear. The impression of the artist got it from this place.
Sure. That's beautiful. What does David, who has this track record, think of this Philistine? David says, I can take down that boy. Yeah, there's this taunt. You see this taunt. It's going on for 6 weeks, 40 days, which is a number in the Bible, a number of testing. 40 is always a number of testing. Whether it's the Jewish people wandering in the wilderness being tested, whether it's Yeshua being tested for 40 days in the wilderness while he's fasting, we see it regularly. Noah, the rain came down for 40 days and nights testing. So 40 is a number of testing. And here it is. The Jewish people are taunted and tested. And tests do two things. They show you what you're not and show you what you are. So they show what you're made of. Like if I brought out a tea bag and just put it out here, you wouldn't really know what it is, except by the label. But even then, I could have changed labels. Until you put it in hot water, you don't know what a tea bag's made of. When we are tested, we find out what we're really made of. That's what God wants for us. So he brings this Philistine, and look at the adjective that King David calls this Philistine, verse 26. He's an uncircumcised Philistine. And the Hebrew word there that he should taunt the armies of God, this is a word that's used throughout Hebrew. And we'll see it again. Reproach is the same word. Taunt is the same word. And what God's going to strip away from us is this. He's going to free us from this mockery that this Gentile, this uncircumcised Gentile is going to do. Well, that's sort of redundant, isn't it? All Gentiles, all Philistines were uncircumcised in those days. What's he really saying?
He's saying, why should you take cheek from a man like that when the armies of God have got God behind them? What are you afraid of him?
Yeah, here's this little kid coming out to the Secretary of Defense, and he's coming out to the armies of King Saul, who've already won all kinds of great things. And he says, what are you afraid of that guy for? Well, maybe because he's bigger than anything I've ever seen. Maybe because he's wrapped in this bronze armor that's massive, and it weighs a lot. Can you imagine carrying it? And he's just walking around strutting. I had this guy on the airplane Monday from Hobart who sat in the middle. I was on the aisle. There were three of us in this three across. A fairly normal sized man in the window. I'm a fairly normal sized man in the aisle. And this brute of a rugby union guy whose shoulders were almost as big as his neck, and his neck was as big as his shoulders. He was mammoth. And the poor guy had no room. Yeah, these are just little Qantas seats. And the poor guy pulled down the tray table in front of him and leaned down like he was taking a nap at school because that's the only place he could find comfort. He had no room. That to say, if I saw that fella coming at me with a bronze suit of armor and hostile and carrying a spear that weighed more than my brothers altogether, I'm thinking, I don't know that I'd have the chutzpah to stand up. So here's this giant taunting Israel, and you're a kid, and all your brothers are cowering. Your king is cowering. All of the armies of Israel are cowering, and you stand up and say, come on, boys, let's go take him down. He's a man of courage. He's a boy of courage who becomes, I'd say, at that moment, a man of courage.
But he has a little confidence.
In whom? In God. He knows God's with him. It's not his own self-confidence. He's confident in God. Look what he says. What will be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? See this pain that's on Israel, this deterioration, this taunting, this evil. Who's this uncircumcised Philistine that he should taunt? The armies of the living God, not the armies of Israel, but we stand for God. God's been with us. He's taken care of us throughout our Exodus wandering. He took care of us in Abraham's day. Come on, boys. And the people answered and said, well, this will be done. And Eliab, his brother, thinks he's making a mockery of his own family. Go back to the sheep, you idiot boy. I mean, that's really what he's saying. Why have you come down here? With whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? Come on, we gave you just a little responsibility. What are you doing down here?
With the men.
I know your insolence and the wickedness of your heart. You've come down just to see the battle. You've come down because the big boys are going to have a fight, and you want to see that. David said, what do I do now? I was just asking a question. So clever. I just wanted to see if I could rally the troops.
In this sense, he's like Jesus. Jesus came as a nobody to the eyes of the Jews, and he broke into Jewish history to come in the way he did. And that's why they found him insolent, like the elders of the clan, and they felt that he didn't have to be there.
Who does he think he is? Yeah, it's a good view when you see the comparison there. Obviously, the teachers of the law said, who is this boy? Isn't he Joseph and Mary's son? Wasn't he the carpenter? Isn't he from Galilee? Keith Green has a beautiful song called I Only Want to See You There, which is a song to his parents of his love for the Lord. And he wanted his parents, one of whom is Jewish, to find Messiah. And he said, he puts himself in as a voice of a prophet. And he says, prophets? Prophets don't grow up from little boys, do they? What? He must be kidding. Thinks he's a prophet? Prophets don't grow up from little boys. So David spoke these words. They were told to Saul, and Saul sent for him. And David said, verse 32, one of those great moments in history, don't let anybody's heart fail on account of that guy. I'll go. Your servant will go and fight with this Philistine. I'm not going to name him. He's just Philistine. I'm not going to name me. I'm your servant. Saul, this is about your battle against them, and I'm here to serve you. This is a man after God's own heart, who has a servant's attitude. At the end of our series, I hope you'll have a good list of things that are character traits that King David displayed that evidence his being a man after God's heart. Here's another one. The servant attitude is beautiful. So then he calls himself your servant again in verse 36 and says, look, the Lord delivered me, verse 37. He'll deliver me again. His confidence was in God. And Saul said, go, may the Lord be with you. Oh boy, what have I gotten him? What's going to happen to this young pup? I mean, I can hear Saul. I don't hear Saul with great, go, child, for God is with you. I just hear this, may God be with you. It's like, I don't know, we've tried everything else. So then Saul put his own armor on the boy. Now, Saul's a giant guy. He's a head and shoulders man. That's what the Bible calls him. He's a head and shoulders taller than anybody else. All the people around him were short. In those days, remember, the great man theory of leadership was that the tallest man was the champion of the tribe.
By the way, in the Talmud, it says that the more taller a person is, the more spiritual he is.
That's why Napoleon had such a hard time, because he was so short. They call it a Napoleonic complex. Someone who's short, who tries to be like a great man. Washington was tall. You get the idea. So here's young David, and here's King Saul, who's a tall man. And his armor would have weighed a lot as well. So David, yeah, thanks. Thanks, boss. Clink, clink, as he walks out of the shop, you know, having put on the armor. So this isn't going to work. We can't go in the strength of other people's defenses. We have to go in our own. We have to do what God wants of us. The Philistine came, and David says, I'm not going out with these. And he, verse 39, takes them off. He's defenseless. Except for one thing, the Lord is my defense. The Lord is my rear guard, he says later on. And this is his confidence. So he takes a stick, some stones, and they will hurt him. Sticks and stones will hurt Goliath. He pulls back. He slings it. However they did slings in those days, we make it with the letter Y. We pull it back on a rubber band. In those days, they probably slung it like a flinging a kerchief with a rock in it. And over it went. The Philistines came on and mocked the boy, who was young, ruddy, and a handsome boy. And he said, who are you? And he cursed David by the god Dagon. Dagon was the main god of the Philistines. And it was the one that David will later mock, and who was constantly mocked. Look, there's a way to say, my God is better than your God, and you mean it, and you know it. There's only one God. All the other gods of the universe are false gods. Is that true? So when people build gods to falseness, you want to say, you idiot. You want to say, I want to tear that down. If you have that right, you can do that. If you don't have a right, if it's in somebody else's property, you leave them alone. That's their place. But you can stand outside, you can mock it, you can deride it all you want. I just recommend that you decry more honestly the name of the Lord than mock other people's gods. But here came this taunter. Did you notice that the Philistine came down to the valley while the Jewish people were up in the other side of the hills and said, send a man down to me? And really, when you think about it, sometimes our fights with Satan are getting down to his level, when all the while we can just let him stay in the valley and leave us alone. We'll just carry on with our business. Did David's anger rise because he was defending the name of God, or because God anointed him to go and defeat the enemy? Either way, we don't know. We can't read the separation there. Whatever it was that triggered it, David was proud of the name of the Lord and wanted his name known, not David's name, from the beginning. Remember, chapter 13 says, he's a man after God's own heart. You come out with sticks, I'm going to rip you apart, verse 44. David said, yeah, well, you come with a whole lot of stuff, but I've got the name of God on my side. You're about to go down. And this day, not future, he doesn't predict that he's going to conquer him in decades. He says, right now, it's going to happen. Slings the rock at his head. He doesn't need five. He only needed one. Whack, falls down, head forward, face forward. Philistines, verse 51, see their champion dead, and they run away. They flee. Now, if there's one guy who's this strong guy, and for 6 weeks you've been mocking the Jews, one guy dies, you're going to run away? Why do they run?
Because they saw that your champion fell dead.
Don't they have other guys? Something's on that side. When a little kid can take down our big fella in all that armor. So here's little shepherd David, knocks down Goliath. Goliath dies, cuts off his head, yipes, takes the sword of Goliath. How big is the sword? How much did that thing weigh? David became more of a man that day as well, not only killing with a stone, but lifting up this Excalibur, if you will, and slicing the head of Goliath. Pardon me if you're listening and you don't like that image, but that's what happened in the Bible. every time Israel won against the Arab League in 1948, 1956, 1967, 1973, whenever you saw those were Davidic Goliath conquests. Pretty remarkable. Now, when this all happens, the end of the story could be, and he cut off his head and they lived happily ever after. But the story doesn't carry on like that. So I encourage you to keep reading from chapter 17 on so that you'll be much more aware of the real good history of the Jewish people and the sad stuff that's going to attend our hero David throughout his days. He'll write plenty of good stuff. So just keep reading in your Bible, in your devotions over the next week, 18, 19, 20. Just read on as far as you can. See if you can anticipate where we're going to go. We're going to talk about Uriah and Bathsheba. We're going to talk about David and Jonathan. So go on into 2 Samuel. We're going to talk about Absalom and the disappointment of his own son, the problems David has. We're going to talk about his being a man of song, man of choice, man of war, man of family. We're going to talk about all kinds of things with King David so that we can appropriate who he is and some of the character traits. Saul hadn't met him, so obviously there's some out-of-order things because last week, there's one of two explanations for that, and the one I like is that it's out of order. It's out of order. So this is the introduction of him, and whoever wrote 1 Samuel got ahead of himself. So excited to tell that music story, kind of introducing King David as a musician. Or the other one is that when Saul heard the music, it was just the music and didn't know who was playing. So it was like piped in through the elevator. He didn't really know Muzak. But I prefer the other one, that it's out of order.
Yeah, but eventually he gets, David, maybe through the javelin at him.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the resentment, the persecution, the protection. Remember, Saul's going to become his father-in-law. So there's some interesting things coming. The book is full of great stuff. We're going to keep learning. We've got 5 more weeks of King David and seeing what we can learn from his life so we can become better in our lives. Number one, bottom line, what do we want to be? A man or woman after God's own heart. No matter what else, no matter if we've got a job or don't have a job, no matter if we have an apartment or we don't have an apartment, if we have a career or don't, if we have options in front of us or apparently not, the number one thing we can do, seek after God early in the morning, long for him all our day.
You've been listening to the Bible class of Jews for Jesus in Australia. For more information, contact us at Jews for Jesus, Post Office Box 925, Sydney, Australia, 2001. God bless you.